Because what if it was really dumb?
Yeah, how's it going, fellas? How are you guys doing?
I'm alright. Chilling. I just finished a 7,000 word epic, so I am feeling relieved.
Nice. Sick. Cool. How about you, dude? How you doing?
Doing good. I just got through shooting some arrows.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I saw your videos of that. How is that?
Good. We're using it for a series. Like, you ever see Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
You know when he's throwing rocks to determine? We're doing that. We're doing it with archery.
Oh, awesome. That's yeah. Really cool.
We just started... I just started The Return again for like the sixth time on the Blu-ray set that I have. I think The Return is the best cinematic work of the last 15 years, without question.
It's the fucking height of... I really feel bad for the people who could not grasp, like, this was such power. I'm on a trip right now, and I brought... the book, The Mothman Prophecies, like that illustrates, like, Lynch is dealing with reality, you know, like the woodsmen are not just a figment of his imagination. Like, they're a legit phenomena in America. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. How would you explain that? Could you elaborate more on that? Because I'm interested.
So I think that it's a coming together of several things. And I think it's even clear if, have you guys read Secret History?
I have not, actually.
Yeah.
Right. It talks about Bob, how he was a person. He was a pioneer, and he goes into the Owl Cave. So there's a pre-existing spiritual energy in that space, but through his own evil doing and death, he is kind of united with it. So you know about like Tommyknockers, like the spirits of dead miners. So they're like Tommyknockers are both human ghosts and gnomes and mannequins. Like, they're earth spirits combined with human spirits. So woodsmen to me are like in part elementals and in part ghosts of the dead from our history.
That's very similar to the sort of like Hopi stuff with Kachinas. And I'm really fascinated by Kachina dolls. And I always have. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with collecting Kachina dolls. And I was specifically the Mudhead. I've got a pretty cool, actually Navajo Mudhead sand painting, that I think these kind of pathways to the dead, I think are really, really interesting. Because it's funny, I'm thinking a lot about summertime right now. And I think the internet space is going to be it's going to be kind of like a tombstone of content creators. I feel like a lot of these pages are going to end up like, you know, GeoCities sites that have just kind of like left themselves into the ether that can be rediscovered. There'll be like a new deep web of COVIDian era content that people will just keep like excavating and digging up and reanimating over and over again. So I almost see the internet as something that, like, it almost has like a specter like fucking presence to it right now.
Yeah.
Especially being in Texas, man. Like, dude, I'm ready to fucking do in real life shit. I'm pretty pumped. I'm going to be making some clothing with the Ciara Huron. Still very mimetic, but one thing I'm really interested in is how will the mimetic quality of this period kind of come into play in a post-COVID world. I'm like obsessed with this idea of partying. Like, I want to fucking party my balls off right now. I don't drink. I'll fucking take acid, do ketamine, bro. Like, whatever. You know what I mean? I want to ask that. I want to ask you guys that question. You want to go first, Goddess? I'm like,
sure. So I think, so with that, that question or another thing? All right, cool, my bad. So I think it's really dependent on the flow of new living energy. I think that the hope is that we get a lot of kids who are ready to party, because I think there are a lot of people who want to remain dead. They've settled into a kind of catatonic state. They don't want to leave the web. They don't want to go outside. They are very happy this way. This is good for them. So I think ideally, yes, ideally, but even then we could end up with kind of a split dynamic of people who remain inside forever, paranoid, you know, terminally, and people who are willing to live. But I think those who are willing to live are already doing so to a large extent.
Yeah. You know, for me, I think it's interesting what's happening right now because, I mean, I have a very interesting relationship with COVID-19 because on one hand, I fucking hate it as much as anyone else does. But on the other, I don't think I would have ever like achieved this place in my work if I hadn't had the insane amount of time that I had this last year to really work on stuff. So even though it's pretty much ruined everything, I feel on a selfish level, like semi-grateful that it happened, because here's what's going on now. I see like the scolds and the COVID fetishists or whatever are like losing ground at the moment. And all these people like us and Monica and like all these kinds of writers and artists who maybe were on the edges of the inside of the thing, but have been pushed out somehow. We had this whole year to be the only people presenting any kind of dissenting ideas. And now people are starting to take notice. I know, you know, the other day from that Paul McCarthy article that I wrote on Substack, I had Walter Robinson, who's a fucking idiot, but very like successful and famous, stepping to me on my Instagram page, and I'm publishing from a Substack. Mm. So part, even though we obviously hate the fact that we've been forced inside, I think we also have to reckon with the fact that it has like this weird rupture in the culture and the political economy might have actually created space for authentic dissenting art. And now we're about to be fucking done with it. And we're going to be running this shit.
That, to me, is pretty exciting. I hope so. I'm a little bit more skeptical, though. I think the concept of crypto, as you call it, crypto transgression, I think things are going to start playing out in the real world. Like, for example, right? Like, I just moved to Texas, so I don't know how it is for everybody else. Like, where are you, Goddisk? Where are you? You're at...
I'm right by New York City.
Okay, so you guys are both, like, New York area. In Texas, everything is essentially open. Like, I'm already getting DJ gigs. Like, I'm already, like, trying to move things into the public sphere. And part of me is wondering, because I just talked to some people in L.A., and they were telling me that things are still pretty kind of shut down, and people are doing things incrementally. Like something will happen. Like there'll be some weird party, sacrament, art show type of thing. But I'm wondering, like, where will the anime girlfriends go now? What do you think? Because I love what you said about anime GFs, by the way. Could you go into that a little bit more? Because I like the concept of engendering the feminine within. Yeah, so I think, man, that's fucking great stuff. So
sure. So I suppose the anime girlfriend and the various ideal GFs are essentially digital forms of the Jungian anima. And I don't think they're going anywhere. I think there will still be a surplus of online libido. Like I said, I think a lot of people are going to be staying inside regardless of what's going on. There are terminally online people who will not leave no matter what. And they are the ones who fuel these kind of energetic outpourings into figures like that. Like Belle Delphine was not unpopular until this year. Or last year, there's always people online. I think, you know, this is not simply a COVID thing. It is a general problem of people who love to be online. yeah. more than reality, which is why this was able to happen. People, you know, in a time without computers, this would not have happened, period. It could not have happened.
Yeah. Well, certainly the public outcry probably would have been amplified to an extreme degree. And honestly, we were talking about Twin Peaks earlier. And my take with the concern, the return was that the people who were complaining about that show were complaining about the fact that it was not the same as the first run of the series, but the entire reason that show came into being was David Lynch was trying to say, it doesn't exist anymore. Like Twin Peaks itself was supposed to represent this small town, beautiful natural area that provides a respite from postmodern digitization of the world. But now we're in liquid modernity and there is no Twin Peaks. There is no respite. So it's crazy, like in a way, Twin Peaks The Return was arguably like the most prophetic work of art to come out because it showed us that we're all living inside this digitized space of mediatized violence, all that shit, like 4 years ago.
But as with the very thesis of my channel, there remain archaic spirits from the past who continue to haunt this space, which is really important. Like the internet is essentially a digitizing of nature itself. Like what Pallia describes as the catonic, the internet is a digital catonic realm. Like I think it's a mistake to view it as a free space. Like it's called ether, and it's not. It's below. It's underground. And so the fact that the old ghosts, the old gods, reappear here, as they do with Twin Peaks, they're only getting stronger. You know, whereas in the original series, like woodsmen were not physically manifesting often, but in The Return they're everywhere, like, and things have gotten bad in The Return, like economically very bad, which is why these ghosts are growing more and more powerful. They roam freely now.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely,
totally. That makes a lot of sense. I feel like Texas, when people talk about places that have their own sort of centralized local way of existing, one of the things that I am really interested in Texas is it truly does want to secede. I'd say it exists almost in a completely different temporality than even these major cities that a lot of people partied in, right? Like, to me, the ghosts here don't exist. Like, the questions of politics, I become increasingly depoliticized because the question of politics is basically null and void here, which I think is really interesting. I feel really personally disconnected from the kind of cultural conversations that people are having, because everyone out here just more or less does not give a fuck. In Austin, people here are just like, the cool thing, the thing that I'm thinking a lot about now is these sort of empty physical planes, right? Like, what is a space that is ripe with resources but has no significant cultural export? So to me, I'm like, how do you then, as you were talking about God, you're talking a lot about these ghosts that exist. How do you create a narrative out of spaces that are not already so convoluted? Because to me, the internet space seems increasingly bloated with just sort of conflicting narratives and people just going on and on and on. And how much of that stuff do you think is going to be outsourced? Like, that's kind of what I'm interested. So God, if you want to answer on that,
So this has been the project that I'm really fascinated by and that I intend on doing after meme analysis is a narrativizing of our landscape, of the country, and of these places. Have you ever randonauted?
I have.
Isn't that like a really fascinating experience? Because it even if you have nothing to do with a place,
Can you explain? Can you explain Random Nautica? Because I've done it, and it's taken me to like broken television sets on the street corner, and like piles of shit behind dumpsters, and it's a really fascinating thing. But yeah, could you explain that?
So sure. So basically, it's an app where you take a map of your location, and that map is utilized as a grid for a quantum random number generator, and they make pinpoints randomly, quantum randomly. And if there's a significant cluster of points on the map, that is your location. So you basically keep an intention in mind, you set the app, and then you go to the place. And oftentimes there are extremely fascinating synchronistic things. I know I've had a lot of very impressive synchronicities while randonauting. And so to me, that is, it's a very deeply romantic project because we are able to narrativize a locality that previously meant nothing. Like you mentioned, you know, behind dumpsters, like these are spaces that we despise, that we hide. Like I have an Instagram account called American Unconscious. And when Randonautica brings me somewhere, I'll usually take a picture if it's interesting. And I do find trash interesting. Like these
are
the spaces.
I find trash incredibly interesting. Isn't it awesome? I love garbage. It's sick.
Mm-hmm. It's like, this is what we ignore. This is literally the repressed. So when we randonaut, it is a return of the repressed in a meaningful form. So it's a way, like for people who don't feel connected to where they are, go randonauting. You will find out new fascinating things about anywhere that you are.
Yeah, do you know the artist Ryan Forster, the photographer and sculptor? Yeah, he does this thing with his work where I wrote about it once. He's interested in the solar anus, but he's very interested in the idea that like the discarded detritus of society doesn't need to be in excess. Like maybe the excess itself can be recuperated back into something closer to the sublime or to beauty, or that excess can be aesthetics and art itself. I have no idea about this app, by the way, but it sounds fascinating. I'm looking at Libtard New York Times piece on it right now.
And that is the romantic alchemical project is transmuting shit and lead into gold.
That's it's like an alchemical. So wait, let me get this straight. It sends you to a place and people are reporting it as having very sort of serendipitous occurrences while heading there.
Yes.
Fascinating.
I've had a few.
Yeah, go for it.
I was with a friend. And it took me to basically like the worst MS-13 ravaged corner of my old neighborhood. And I saw, and it was like completely weird because it took me to this, it actually had me return to this place that I had lived before, but took me to like the worst gangbanger house on the block. And it set me right in front of that. And I'm just like, yeah, it's so fucking weird how that works. What is it? Like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it.
So I've written about this quite a bit. So you're aware of Jung's synchronicity?
Yes, yes.
So there are like three kinds of synchronicity, just like trying to quickly. So there are synchronicities that are instantaneous. So I say something and you say the same thing. A jinx is a synchronicity. It just happens automatically at the same time. Then there are synchronicities that are spatial. So I might, you know, write something down and it happens 10 miles away from me, but it happened at the same time. That was a synchronicity. And then there is temporal synchronicity. So I dreamt of something last night and it happened today. So that was separated by time. So when we randonaut, like it's kind of a question of like, is this something that we are like kind of remote viewing? Are we remote viewing that future? Are we remote viewing it right now? Like it's basically a meeting of flows, a meeting of energies.
Could there be a aspect to it that is sort of a heightened apophenia? Because I feel like in times like now, chaotic political social moments, people start tending to project patterns and meaning onto lots and lots of different occurrences.
Yeah.
If we write down an intention and it's very clear and there is a undeniable synchronicity, I might even say a majority of them are apophenia, but there are undeniable synchronicities as well. There are things that are not, like, I'll give you an example. So I did one, I was at a telephone pole. So I used JC, I used Jesus Christ, because it's JCP&L. And it brought me to a church. You know, that is not me seeking a pattern. That is a direct synchronistic correspondence. I agree, apophenia is a presence, but I also think it's dangerous to say that there are no synchronicities.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah, I'd be curious while we're talking about these random occurrences and such like that. Have you guys ever come across any ghosts? Because I'm like the type of person who doesn't believe that the occult can be accessed through such like pedestrian means. And yet one time I was strung out on OxyContin late at night, went to the bathroom in this old house that my parents used to live in. And I was dead sure that I was like looking at the ghost and telling myself it's not real. I don't know why I'm asking this, but it seems related somehow.
I sort of see myself. Have you guys read any of Eric Davis's stuff? He talks a lot about. He's pretty interesting. He talks a lot about, you know, etheogenics and these kind of like non-dialectically materially informed occurrences that we somehow call, it's like a metaphysical ontology. And so I do think it's so hard to say because there are things objectively that can exist materially that, you know, really cross, but they sort of merge between what's real, what we call the real, and what we call the metaphysical. And these are things that I think we shouldn't discount. Like, I'm not going to say that this shit doesn't exist, right? Like, I'm not going to say these things don't particularly exist, that there's no way they can exist. I'm fully open to the existence of everything and all things. And I think, honestly, if you're going to be making anything artistic or generative or writing, whether that's an insane idea or not, That's the kind of ethos that you need to adopt. You need to adopt absolute openness to all transcendental things. Instead of trying to relinquish the transcendental, you have to be open to all of it. And so I try to remain fully, fully open to any of these possibilities at any given time. And people will say, well, that's hylozoism, that's panpsychism, blah, blah, blah. But if we see things like, I'm increasingly more conceptually interested in blockchain,